session number 11363, Reel 3.
Mr. Withers, Reel 3. You were about to say a chap shouted out.
But just prior to that, the lookout on the forecastle shouted something. I don't know exactly what he shouted, but anyway, the officer of the watch was up on the top of the bridge, on the wing of it. And he ran over to the voice pipe and shouted down to the chap on the wheel below, in the wheelhouse below, hard as starboard. But of course it's too late. There's no way he could avoid it. And we just hit the reef and he just stopped dead. So with that, the officer went over and rang the alarm. All the bells went and everybody was turned out for lifeboat station. So we all turned out for lifeboats. Went to our lifeboat station and the bosun went down forward with his line sounded the hold. They sounded number one and there was 30 foot of water. He shouted up back up onto the bridge, 30 foot of water in number one, and he sounded number two and that was dry. So they knew then that the collision bulkhead had held, you see. Do you know about ships, do you? The collision bulkhead. Well, the first bulkhead in the ship is the collision, the extra strength. And any collision, it helps to, you know. So they knew then that there was no danger then. It was strong, the damage was confined to the first hole. See. So they said, dispersed everybody. All go back to bed. Those are not keeping watch. So everybody went back to what they were, you know, back to the bed. And we sent out, well, the next thing they did, they wouldn't normally do, they got a searchlight on the bridge, you know, a light. So they switched this on and swung it round. And there was a little strip of sand, a little bit of an island where this reef was. And on there was this pylon with this light. It was the light that had gone out. It was unattended light. And where they'd gone wrong, they shouldn't have placed so much reliance on an unattended light. Apparently the tender came out every so often. And topped it up with oil. It must have run out of oil or something and gone wrong with it. And the light had gone out. And that was it. Well, came daylight. They radioed for assistance. It was only 40 miles off Port Sedan then. So they must have radioed for assistance. And a tug, as soon as daylight came, there's a tug coming out. And they thought, everybody thought, they were quick, you know. But it was the tender coming out to service the light. So if it had been another day earlier, it wouldn't have happened, but still one of those things. So then, the big worry with me being the first trip, I thought, well, I have to get banned, you know, sure to get some other blame for this, you know. But we didn't. None of the lookouts was held to blame at all. As it turns out. And so it came daylight, so they then had to wait for tugs to come out with lighters, which they did the course of a day, and brought lighters out and barges and whatever and all the things they could muster from Port Sedan, and started to get the deck cargo off, all the forward, they concentrate on the forward part, so trying to lighten as much as they could, the forward part of the ship, so they could float it off without any further damage, you know, as opposed to dragging it off as it was. So they forgot about, I don't know how many of these fuzzy wuzzies, you know, these Sudanese. You've seen them on remember the old film, The Four Feathers?
Yes.
The fuzzy wuzzy with the what they call the dreadlock things, the greasy, dirty, scrubby. They were always descending on them like a horde. So they started unloading, discharging into the lighters. And that went on for about 4 days. And there was, the captain solved the problem of the stevedores by putting them on a, giving them a hatch cover and some dunnage. They made themselves a big tent. And they lit themselves on fire and they gave them some supplies, some grub. And they camped out on this little island, you know. Because if you climb down the anchor cable, the anchor cable was down, but it was just on the coral. You're only in about 3 foot of water. But back from where the coral was, it was 60 fathoms. So it went from 60 fathoms to 3 feet or so. You could wade ashore if you could climb down the anchor cable. And anyway, they managed to get some of the aircraft crates off and much as they could. A lot of the stuff. And beer started to come up then, so a lot of the beer went missing. Crates of beer. I can remember that. That went, a lot of beer went missing. And I think it was about the fourth day. We were told then that it should be off around about the early hours of the morning. And there was a big Navy salvage tug coming out to attend to that. There's still tugs about taking lighters and whatever. So there's a big salvage tug, I forget now, it's something like the Samson or something, the name was. It's a Navy tug. They came and we got the towing wire ready, you know, to put over. It's a big, thick steel cable. It takes hours to get it out of the locker, you know. We got that out because we used to do the rope work when in port and things. The Dems, the gunners, was a part of, you know, part of our duties. On that ship it was. And we got this time wire out ready. Anyway, they said to be off in the early hours. And when it's ready for off, we will sound the siren. And everybody will turn to and do whatever they have to do. Whatever duties you're assigned to do. But we were on the towing wire. We've got to put the towing wire over. So the siren went, I think it was around about the same time as it struck, around about the early hours. So I was down there first with a chap named Brockwell, a Londoner. The minute we got down, the officer was there. He said, get down into the jolly boat. The jolly boat's under the stern. He said, shift it, because when we start the screw, it'll chew the boat up. You know, it'll have no jolly boat. So we got down into the boat and shoved it out of the way. Now, I'm a bit vague about as to why. I know we got the boat away from the ship. And then the tug moved up and took over in the way. And we pulled out of the way and pulled it up onto the reef, the boat, and went over to the camp where all the stevedores were. Because we didn't know what to do. There's no way, you know, of getting back once it took it. I don't know exactly why we couldn't get back on the ship, why we couldn't get back onto the tug or whatever. But anyway, deemed it necessary to get out of the way. So we pulled it up under the reef and waded ashore and went to the Sudanese. In the meantime, the ship was off then. By this time it was off. And away it went, very slowly, of course. So we made signs and said we wanted what could they do? Well, I forget now exactly how we got. But they got a boat from one of the tugs that was towing lighters. So they made signs. None of them could speak English. They made signs for us to get in the boat. And we got in their boat, and they took us out to the tug. And we then, it was, went up to the bridge, and it was an English chap, a chap from Morven, the captain of the tug. And we introduced ourselves. He was a bit surprised to see us. He was only just got our trunks on. And he said, that's all right. He sent for one of the crew and he put a pan of some old matches and put us on top of the engine room fiddly. And he said, get your heads down and I'll find you a job in the morning, find you some work to do in the morning, he said. So we had a sweep on this warm weather, you know, the weather was warm. And with no problem, just breakfast time, he calls down, we sat, he got somebody with him, I don't know who he was, a civilian. He'd just gone along for the ride, I think. And we went down in the captain's quarters, in the cabin, in his saloon. And it was all mahogany lined out, the old tugs were. And had breakfast, waited on. And he said, I've got a job for you, you come up with me. So up we went, up on top of the, above the wheelhouse, there was an awning on the top. And on emergency ship they call that the Monkey Island, above the wheelhouse. But there was an awning there, you sit there. And he says, there's a couple of chairs there, he says, sit there and keep out the way. And we were towing some lighters in. They were going back towards Port. So on the way back towards Port Sedan, we passed another...
On the way back to where?
He was going into Port Sedan with these lighters, you see. And on the way back, there's another tug going out to pick some more lighters up. So we signalled to them, with the Aldis, for them to pick up our boat, our jolly boat. We'd left the jolly boat there on the reef. So would they pick it up? So we got that worry out of the way. We arranged for the boat to be picked up. And we arrived in Port Sedan before the ship. We'd been in Port Sedan about an hour and then received a message to say that the tug that was towing our shipping, the boilers had boiler trouble, and would they? He was ordered out to tow it in. So we went out to tow our own ship in. But we were sat under this awning. They couldn't see us, but we could see them up there. They were sweating away with this wire, and we were just sitting there loading it up. Little did they know we were sitting there under the awning. Doing nothing, doing all the work. Anyway, we towed it in, and it was 9 o'clock, or thereabouts, in the evening, by the time we got back into Port Sedan. So we reported to the officer that the boat was safe, you know. Oh, I'm not bothered about the boat. He said, I've been out of my mind, and worrying about you too. Wonder where the devil you are. When you think about it, from 2 o'clock or thereabouts, until 9 o'clock the following evening, it must have been a bit of a concern. But anyway, that's where we ended. They unloaded all the cargo there and took 6 weeks by the time they'd discharged all the cargo and put in concrete to strengthen up the, to reinforce it. And the nearest place we could get repairs was Bombay. So we set off then for Bombay. And we were there several months. First of all, the Georgic was in, that had been bombed in Tewfik. That was in waiting for survey. to go in the dry dock. That went in and we followed it in. And they, after, when it came out the dry dock, we went in after it. And they took a lighter in. Oh no, they didn't. They just took in and surveyed, see what they wanted, to, what was needed. And came out, took it out again. But what had happened, down in number one, they couldn't clear all the bombs. There were still bombs down there in the bottom. So it was over a period of months. But in the meantime, there's a court martial. The three officers, the captain, the navigating officer, and the officer of the watch, the first officer, was court-martialed. Well, for the court-martial, it had to be sent to, we had to go to Mombasa.
You had to give evidence at the court?
Yeah. There's three of us, see, the chap, three lookouts to give evidence. So we went, we had to go down to Mombasa. So we took passage on a cruiser, HMS Frobisher, down to Mombasa. And we did normal lookouts and odd jobs, you know, the same as the crew. You sort of work your passage on the Navy ship. And the court-martial was over a period of 3 days, day for each one, on the resolution, in the battleship resolution. In the wardroom, and the first day, the first officer was the case of the first day was the first officer. He was acquitted, and he was the officer of the watch, which is a bit of a surprise to me, really. But he was acquitted, and the captain and the other, the navigating officer, they were severely reprimanded. In all, we spent about a fortnight there. And then we returned to Bombay, to the ship. But we returned by the HMS Adamant submarine depot ship, which is going to Colombo for dry docking. So we took passage on that. And then we went by rail then up to Bombay and joined the ship, and they finished the repair. When they repaired it, before they repaired it, they took it into dry dock and took a lighter in alongside it and took the bombs out when they, you know, in the dry dock, took the bombs out, put them on the lighter and floated the ship and the lighter out and dumped the bombs at sea somewhere. And when they finally took it in, they prefabricated the bow, made all the bits. They cut away all this scrap. They estimated 70 tons, I think it was, of this, the scrap, all the metal, compressed. They cut it up into small chunks, dragged it to the side of the dry dock. While they were working on the bow, they were cutting this big chunk up into manageable bits because the crane would only pick up 2 tons, the dockside crane. So that's how they got overcome that. But there were several bombs. There was a lighter load of bombs in the bottom. It had been in all those months, you know. So it was the best part of 6 months by the time we finished and came out. It was all fixed. And it was all hand riveted. All riveted, no pneumatic riveters. It's all hand riveted. There's nothing like that. No pneumatic hammers or nothing in the dock. So we then loaded general cargo and proceeded down to Colombo. From there we went up to Calcutta, and then we discharged there in Kidapur dock in Calcutta. And we loaded tea, electricity for Liverpool. And Gunny, you know, bells of Hessian. And they moved into the river then, and the next morning they come and brought out, they brought out 200 monkeys in cages for the polio research in America, in the States. Poliomyelitis research place. They were in cages on deck. Then we moved down then, down the East Coast to a place called Vizagapatam. And we loaded, finished loaded there with manganese ore. From there we went down to Colombo and bunkered there, and then we couldn't go through the northern route from us through around Australia. We had to go the southern route, so went down to Fremantle, around the south, stayed there about a week in Fremantle. So some trouble with the engine room down below somewhere, and they sorted that out down in Fremantle. And we carried on then up through, round the south of New Zealand, and through the Pacific up to the canal, the Panama. And through the canal to Savannah, in Georgia. We got through the boom. As soon as we entered the harbour, they turned us round and we sent us up to Baltimore. And that's where we paid off there. And the first thing they did, got the monkeys off, because they smelt, you know, it was summer. And the stink was a bit overpowering. The captain was most anxious that they got the monkeys off first before they did it.
And so you never saw the enemy the whole time you were on the Empire Pinto?
No. We did the one where I missed, one bit I did forget. When we were going up towards Aden, I was on watch with a chap named Bill Young. He had a chap, he had been out, he was on one of the last ships out of Rangoon when the Japanese occupied Rangoon. And he came down in Indian Ocean and they were torpedoed. He lost the ship. And it was 7 days in the boats. And he was picked up. And he came back to the UK and did a gun layers course, and he came out with, went out with us to the States and whatever, and joined the ship. It was a gun layer, Bill Young. Now, there's one thing I forgot. When we were in Port Sudan, we were ashore one night, Bill and myself, and there were caffs and tables outside. You could sit outside because the weather was, you know. And we sat out there. And he looked over the next table, and this chap looked at the same time. And, oh, you never seen nothing like it. It was a crew, some other crew, of the Chios, a Greek ship that had picked him up. I think it was about February 42, January, February 42. And this, I took in there, would be around about September time. And it turned out they were in the next berth to us in Port Sudan, the Chios was. We didn't know. It was right astern of us. And they took us back in the taxi to the ship. And they got no fridges, no freezers or nothing on this one. And they got poultry, and they got three or four pigs, and like a little farmyard. They got fish, they got and they opened a bottle of whiskey, coffee, little cups like the Arabs thing. Made us all really. If his own parents could welcome them more than what they did, they thought the world of it. Oh, it was just marvelous. And one amusing thing about that was the pigs, one of the crew members showed me, him, he pointed to one of the pigs, him, Mussolini, And I said, why Mussolini? Him next. So I couldn't speak much English.
To kill next.
Oh, I really thought that was wrong.
Can you tell me about your next ship after the Empire Pintail?
Well, we left the ship in Baltimore. And we were drafted then up to New York. And I joined a ship called the Samuel. I don't know whether you pronounce it Veery or Very. It's the Veery pistol in?
Yes. Yeah,
the Veery. It is Veery, isn't it? That had just come round from Auckland. It had been built in Auckland. It was a coaster. And there were only two gunners on it. They brought it round from Auckland. And it called in New York. We joined it in New York. Two of us. They made us four crew. It loaded general cargo, spam, and you know, the usual stuff. And we set off then up through Long Island Sound, up through Cape Cod Canal, into Boston. So the Cape Cod Canal, Boston. We waited for a convoy there up to Halifax. We were there a few days waiting for a convoy. We were convoyed then up to Halifax. And we waited the convoy. They weren't allowed ashore. We were convoyed then from Halifax to Liverpool. And it took 18 days. We were an eight-knot convoy. I don't know how many ships. I think there were about 40 ships in the convoy. One was a whale factory ship. I can remember that. There was another one, astern of us, a Powellish, big one. Well, he was big because he was on a new coaster. And he couldn't keep station properly. He kept creeping up. And he turned around, he'd be almost up on your stern, you know. You had to keep phoning the bridge, and he'd sound his whistle and swear at him, but it wouldn't make any difference. He'd do it again. But it was a bit hairy, you know. But apart from that, we got all went through. I can only remember seeing about four escorts. The four trawlers, I think they were. And the first leading one was a four-stacker, American destroyer. And we had atrocious weather all the way back. Fog. The first few days, which is commonplace up there, after Newfoundland and that way. And it was fog for days on end. Now they kept together, I don't know, in the fog, but they did. And we managed to get back into Liverpool.
And you didn't meet the enemy then?
No, never saw a thing. Never saw a thing. They were even had an alarm, you know. This was 1943, to be about August. And we'd end up, I should think we'd be in Garston, Liverpool, about September time. From there, it moved on up to Gourock, and I came off there. And I joined the ship, one of the old lake steamers. That's the long one with the bridge on the front end, the sharp end, they call it that. And the engine room right aft. The Great Lakes steamers. They brought them over from the Great Lakes.